bring on a good friend of mine, Adam Carney. He's a master in the rules of golf. Adam, good afternoon.
Hey, how are you, Matt?
How's it going?
Everybody good?
We're good. And obviously, Adam, I'm sure your phone blew up Saturday morning. It might have blown up Friday afternoon. Who knows? But let's give Adam Scott all the credit in the world. He won the golf tournament.
Oh, sure.
But I believe the golf tournament would have had a different feel if this Tiger situation had not come up. Let's go back to the shot hitting the flagstick. It goes in the water. What are his options from there?
Well, you know, Rule 26-1 gives him, you know, essentially two options there. He can keep the point at last across the margin of the hazard between himself and the hole, and he can play a ball as near as possible to where he played his previous stroke, which was the option that he chose. You know, additionally, at Augusta, there on 15, there is a drop circle. Tiger decided that, you know, that wasn't the strat he wanted to play. So he went out of that second option. And, you know, the rule says play a ball as near as possible to where you played your previous stroke. It does not say drop a ball at the point where you played your previous stroke. It says play a ball. So, you know, he almost lucked into being okay, I think. You know, he dropped it 2 yards back, ball rolls forward. And from what I saw, it was maybe 2 or 3 feet away from the divot. Had it rolled up right next to the divot, I don't think we're having this conversation.
Well, and Cabrera and Snedeker chose to drop on that hole. That was the same hole that they both dropped from the drop area.
They dropped on 13.
Okay, that was 13, but there's the same drop area on both holes like that. And explain also that because the ball hit the flag and went left, that's why he couldn't drop where he would. But if it would have just came straight back in, you can drop back as far as you want to. Is that right? On a lateral hazard?
That's one of those things that, you know, is one of the most misunderstood rules in golf, at least regarding water hazards. You know, oftentimes players want to use the line that the ball flew in and not use the point at last across the margin as that reference point. So when it struck the flagstick and it came back into the hazard, it actually came in to the player's left side of the hazard, which, keeping the point between him and the hole, probably would not have given him the option to drop it anywhere, maybe in pine straw. So, you know, that option was probably gone immediately because of the point at last across the margin. And then, you know, so he was left with the ball drop, or he was left with the option that he chose, and that was to play ball as near as possible to where he played his previous stroke.
And, Adam, let's say that he drops a ball maybe a foot away, but he's on a downslope there. The ball's going to roll forward of where he last played his shot. Would he have been in breach of the rules then?
If he had played it, yes. He would. You know, he's. You know, the rule goes back to, you know, 26-1 goes back to, you know, the 27-1 option, and then it refers back to Rule 20. You know, and so in Rule 20, we talk about spots where you're required to redrop, and you know, one of those instances would be that the ball, you know, came to rest closer to the hole than where the previous stroke was played. So it would have been had to redrop, and had he redropped it, you know, a second time the ball rolled forward again, he would then be required to replace the ball as near as possible, or at least where it struck the first part of the golf course. So, you know, I really think what happened was, you know, in Tiger's mind's eye, he was proceeding under the option of, you know, playing the ball as near as possible, but in some way, shape, or form, may have been thinking, okay, I've got to keep this point between me and the hole and go as far back in the line. I think he just confused the two options, and I think he admitted that in the press conference that, you know, he dropped it 2 yards further back intentionally, and I can't imagine that there would be for any other reason than he just simply got confused under what option he was proceeding under.
Let me ask you this. If the caller does not call in to some buddy of his that's a rules official and says, hey, you need to go back and look at Tiger's shot on 15, his after his drop, are we having this discussion right now, even if Tiger brings it up in the press conference? Because I think if he brings it up in the press conference in that setting, he's probably disqualified.
I think you're probably right. And, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about should he have been disqualified and the rules that were applied. And particularly the new decision in Rule 33 that basically allows for, you know, evidence to be collected through use of high-speed video, which really, it was talked about. It really isn't applicable to this situation. But It's really a chronology thing, and it's, you know, hey, at 4 o'clock, Fred Ridley gets a phone call, says, hey, we need to take a look at what happened here. They look at it, they don't think it's a problem, and Tiger's on the golf course at that point. And so at that point, the committee, while Tiger was still playing, had really said, hey, we don't have a problem here. And so had they needed to talk to him in the scoring area and say, we have a problem with your drop, they would have stopped him before he signed his scorecard, and we wouldn't have had a problem under 6-6. We're signing the wrong scorecard. So essentially, I think what happened was the committee really said, hey, we're okay. Then after the round, Tiger has the press conference, talks about the fact he dropped it two yards further back, you know, in an effort to get a more comfortable yardage, whatever it was. And now we've got a whole new ball of wax. So I think, you know, a lot was talked about that decision in 33 where, you know, the use of high-speed video determines. I really think the committee made a ruling while Tiger was on the golf course, decided he was okay, and then subsequently found out, no, he wasn't. And so essentially what happened is that they absolved him of penalty prior to signing the scorecard and then later found out that, well, yeah, actually he did have a procedural issue. So I think they actually made the right decision. I honestly think it's comical when I hear all the commentators talking about, you know, Tiger should withdraw, or, you know, the rules of golf are there to protect the entire field. And I think the committee applied the rules properly in this case. But before we got all that information, I was with you. I thought, hey, he's disqualified. But, you know, you and I don't get all that information. But fortunately, through the new media types we have, we were able to get that information and sift through it as rules people ourselves and say, yeah, the committee made the right decision.
Is there any truth to the rumor that somebody did call in from just somewhere else instead of, like, the committee or people that were actually a part of it are watching and see that, but somebody from possibly a different state or just somebody called in watching it on TV? Is there any truth to that?
I don't know. I haven't talked to any of the guys that were working that week. I think it's entirely possible. I mean, you know, having worked a couple PGA championships, I can tell you that there's a call center set up in the rules trailer where, you know, there are rules officials stationed with, you know, video replay.
It's the only sport. Hey, Adam, I've seen holding calls not be called in college football, but I can't call in and say, oh, by the way, Mr. Referee, Mr. Zebra, you missed a holding call three plays ago.
And like you said, rules are there to protect the game, integrity, and the players, but we talked about this a second ago, every one of Tiger's shots on camera, but every one of the other people's shot aren't on camera, so people can't call in about that.
And, I mean, offensive linemen never hold, do they, Matt?
Of course not. Of course not.
Not to protect the quarterback, they don't.
Especially if we get a good play.
You know, I think it's definitely one of the nuances to golf and applying the rules of golf. It's different. And, you know, we can have this debate forever. But, you know, at the end of the day, it works both ways. You could protect a player, or you could, you know, cause harm. And I think at the end of the day, as rules officials, we want to protect the players in accordance with the rules. And in that situation, you know, I think it's a good thing. But that said, you know, for every one call that you get that has substance, there are 999 that have none. So it's definitely – it creates more work for the Rules Committee.
Adam, do you think that the USGA will change the definition of as nearly as possible to maybe say within one club length?
You know, I don't know. You know, I'm not sure that – this situation is earth-shattering enough that it would cause them to look at that situation. I really think that the rule is pretty well cut and dry. You're going to drop the ball as near as possible. I mean, I don't have to, you know, if you give them that one club length leverage, what does that change? You know, because now one club length may be from the rough to the fairway. And so we've talked about forever, you know, this whole change in cuts thing, at least we talk about it at the club level. And, you know, the rules of golf really don't distinguish between rough and fairway. So it's all through the green. So I probably would say no. I think it gives the player way too much advantage if they were to change it to say, hey, it must be dropped within one club length.
Okay, and then also anchoring the putter. We saw Adam Scott win. What's your stance on anchoring a putter?
And to add on to that question, does the Masters, Augusta, do they have a different rule that the PGA's rule set up for all the other tournaments? Like, would they both have to do it for it to not be able to be used at the Masters?
Well, let me give my opinion, and then I'll answer your question, Matt. I think that anchoring has been going on long enough that we've seen that it doesn't adversely affect the game. I don't think it really creates that much of an advantage. I think that anything that we would do to change the rules of golf that make the game harder right now when golf has participation numbers that are lower and economically it's challenged, I really think it's a horrible decision to make. I could see, you know, for the tour player, if there was some substance to it, yes. But, you know, for the average player, we are all supposed to play in the same rules of golf. And I think that so to change that rule, really, I mean, we're talking about changing it for a very, very, very small percentage of golfers in the world. So I'm completely against it. To answer your question, Matt, you know, all competitions are played under the rules that are established by the two governing bodies, the United States Golf Association and the Royal and Ancient Club. And everyone adheres to those rules. However, there have been fractions in those two associations in the past. But for the last 20-plus years, we've had a uniform code, and there is a solemn vow by the two associations to not ever break away again. But the driving force behind rules and rules changes is always going to be the tour player, and it's always going to be tour events. So the PGA Tour, albeit is a separate association, as is the PGA of America, as is the Augusta National Golf Club, are separate associations from the United States Golf Association and the Royal and Ancient. They could still compete under all the rules of USJ and RNA, but have their own set of rules that are different.